This is McGuire on the Wire, brought to you by McGuire Sponsel. We are a national consulting firm aiming to provide facts, advice, and updates on the ever-changing world of tax law. This podcast will give you base-level information as well as high-level thought leadership on how to navigate these technical disciplines. At McGuire Sponsel, we provide unique services to our clients using an old-school, hands-on approach that is deeply respected within the CPA industry. Now stick around and listen to one of our experts. We're glad you're here.
Hello. Thank you for joining us today. Today, I want to talk a little bit about some of the provisions in the CARES Act that have been kind of glanced over a little bit in recent weeks. Now, the CARES Act obviously is the stimulus bill for coronavirus. The point of this obviously is to influx as much cash into the economy as possible to ensure that the economy doesn't collapse. And that was being done in a few different ways. Obviously, probably the most well-known is the Paycheck Protection Program, which was for small businesses, with either fitting the small business description under the SBA program or having 500 or less employees. Obviously, besides that, there's also this $500 billion worth of funding for mid-sized businesses and large businesses affected by the coronavirus, including airlines and other things, and some mid-sized business loans for businesses between 500 and 10,000 employees. And there's a number of these different provisions in there. And so a lot of the conversations have centered around, how do these loan programs work? How do these stimuli? How does this free cash work? Because obviously that's kind of the sexy programs out there, that and the direct payments to the people of the United States, where there's going to be direct cash payments to different households. But we have to remember that a lot of stimuli, when they're put in by Congress, tend to be tax related. So I wanted to spend a little bit of time and dive into a couple specific areas related to tax changes that were done specifically for these reasons, specifically to get some additional funding out there. And so I'm going to really concentrate on probably three different areas. One is the changes to the net operating loss, or the NOL carryback provisions. I also want to talk briefly about the 163J, or the interest limitations, and then also this big change called qualified improvement property. So first, let's just talk briefly about this net operating loss. So what am I talking about here? Well, there was a significant change to the way we handle net operating losses under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and we got restrictions on when we can carry those losses back, specifically starting at the end of 2017, so basically for tax years 2018 and forward. And so what that means is you can't go out and you can't just generate a loss in many of those years and carry it back to prior years. And that's a big deal for a lot of taxpayers, especially right now, where potentially you're going to have a really bad 2020, or you're looking for short-term cash flow. So you're going, okay, is there anything I can accelerate into 2020 to offset my tax liability, or 2019 even, if we haven't filed that return, to offset my tax liability, potentially throw me into a loss and carry that loss backwards? And so Congress saw this when they were writing this bill, and so what they did is they changed it and said, okay, for the next couple of years, basically for 2018, 2019, 2020, we're going to give you the ability to carry those losses back up to 5 years. So what that means is, let's say, remember, right now we're sitting in April of 2020, and because of the coronavirus, the tax date was extended until July. So what that means is we can actually go in right now and file a 2019 return, potentially generate a loss on that 2019 return, which that means if we've made estimated tax payments, et cetera, we would get a refund for that. But then let's say we have an additional $200,000 worth of loss. We can now then go back and amend our 2018 return. And if there's no income there, we can go back and amend 2017 and generate and move that loss back those couple of years to then amend those returns with that additional loss and get a refund there. And so this is a way that was specifically designed in the program as a way to generate some cash flow for businesses. And there's more, and I'll mention there was actually a revenue procedure that confirms this is done specifically to generate those losses, and they expect people to be looking at these tax provisions. The other thing that they did under this is they changed the 163J limitation. So under 163J, there's a limitation to interest, and there's a number of calculations. Basically, the calculation is your income, interest income made plus 30% of your gross receipts plus any floor plan interest, and that's your limitation on your interest. And what they did is they changed that 30% limitation. They actually changed it to 50%. And so over the next couple of years, we're going to have the ability to basically have up to 50% of our income count. If we have interest, we can actually use that to count against that income. And that's a big deal, especially right now where we expect to see incomes drop for businesses. And that's going to be a big deal for them to be able to offset more and more of that income through taking deductions against that grocery, that business interest that they have. And that was a change that they put in there once again to specifically increase the amount that businesses could deduct, lowering their tax rates, keeping more money in place. So once again, that was it 30% after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and they've changed that to 50% for the next couple of years. Now, all that kind of pales compared to qualified improvement property. Qualified improvement property was something that was designed in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. The idea of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was to allow businesses to deduct what's called qualified improvement property over 15 years, basically depreciate it over 15 years, which would make it bonus eligible. And what I mean by bonus eligible is that you can actually write something off through something called bonus depreciation. And what that means is a bonus depreciation eligible asset, instead of depreciating it over the lifespan of that asset, you actually get to write it off in the year it's placed in service. Bonus depreciation is currently 100%. So let me give you an example. A building is typically a 39-year asset. And so if you build out a portion of your building, for $1 million, you depreciate it over 39 years. Every year you get 1/39th of that $1 million and you deduct that against your income. Now, they created this qualified improvement property, which is supposed to be non-structural improvements to the interior of a building. Now, like I said, prior to this law, that was 39 years as well. So let's just take that 1 million, assume that it all qualifies as this qualified improvement property. Prior to the CARES Act, that was a 39-year asset. So you take 1/39th of it every year. Now, under the CARES Act, what they did is they actually did actually what was supposed to be done under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which is they made that 39-year asset a 15-year lived asset and made it eligible for bonus depreciation, which means if you have that $1 million worth of improvements to the building, you can write them off right away instead of depreciating them over the life of that asset or 39 years, which is a huge benefit for a lot of businesses. So once again, we take that. Let's go back and talk about a company that did something like that back in 2019. And prior to the CARES Act, they would have had $1 million worth of income in 2019. Now, if they go back and they look at that QIP, that qualified improvement property that they placed in service, and let's say that's $1 million worth of those assets, they can immediately write those assets off, which will offset all of that income they have. They won't owe any taxes in 2019. If they have made estimated tax payments throughout the year, they can quickly get a refund for that, and it'll push some cash into their business. But as I mentioned, now they have that NOL carryback. So let's say they had $1 million worth of this QIP, but they only have $500,000 worth of taxable income. Well, number one, they won't have any taxes due in 19, but then they've got a $500,000 loss that they can carry back into 18 or 17, depending on the situation. So that's a really big benefit for a lot of businesses. So let's just briefly talk about what this QIP actually is. So QIP is non-structural improvements to the interior of a building after the building is placed in service. So when we're talking about that, that could be anything from drywall partitions, it could be lighting systems inside the building, it could be flooring systems. It's non-structural improvements. And when we're talking about structural there, we're not talking about structural in the definition of personal versus real property. We're talking structural in terms of really what an engineer would think of as structural. Trusses, spandrels, load-bearing walls, elevators, escalators, stairwells, that kind of thing. So anything we do inside those four walls in the roof that's like that, so that the non-structural assets, we can take as this qualified improvement property, which is a significant amount of what's done in a building renovation. Now, that also means it can't be exterior. So exterior HVAC units, an HVAC unit on the roof, any work you do the facade of the building, that kind of thing wouldn't qualify. But that means we can go through and we can look at a lot of assets. The other thing I said that it was is non-structural improvements placed in service after the building's placed in service. They don't actually have a timeline there. That could, in theory, just be the next day or a very short period of time afterwards. But also, that date differential between when you place it in service, the QIP, and when you place the building in service, the building is from the date the building's originally placed in service by any taxpayer. So what that means is I could go out and buy a building tomorrow. If that building had been built by somebody else or held by somebody else, say 10 years ago, I could start renovating the interior of that building to meet my criteria the day I buy it, and all those assets would be bonus eligible, and I'd be able to write those off immediately. So that's a big benefit for a lot of people. Now, a couple caveats. Number one, this can't be done for residential property. This is only non-residential property. The other thing is there are some limitations specifically related to that 163J. There was an ability to elect out of it. A lot of people didn't do that. But if you did elect out of it, you were electing to be a real property trade or business, which does not allow you to deduct your qualified improvement property. And unfortunately, that's an irrevocable election. So, and we haven't gotten any guidance from the IRS as an ability to get out of that due to the changes in law. So we do have to look at that. But this is very critical for a lot of businesses. And this goes back, this qualified improvement property changes for 2018 and 2019, which that means, so let's, there's a couple different scenarios there. How do I fix it if I did this in 2018? Well, if I did originally, let's say I put $500,000 worth of qualified improvement property in service in 18. I then have not yet filed my 19 tax return yet. I would have two options to fix it. One would be I go back and I amend my 18 return. The other option would be is that I file what's called a change in accounting method on my 19 return. And so if I amend the 18 return, I'm going to get those deductions on my 18 return, and we'll see however much I paid in taxes in 18, I'll be able to justify. If I create a loss on the 18 return, I can carry it back to 17. However, if I push it through on a change in accounting method in 19, that all pushes through my 19 return, and any changes gets affected then. Now, if I did something in 18 and I have filed my 18 return, I've also already filed my 19 return. According to the IRS, I've adopted a method of accounting there, so my only way of fixing it is to file a change in accounting method at that point in time, which would push it all through into 19. So there's a lot of things that we need to look at here, but the numbers are too great for a lot of taxpayers to ignore it. Now, I mentioned that it was obvious that the IRS and Congress put this in. One of the ways we know this is there were some changes a few years ago to certain partnerships. And there was a limitation put on certain partnerships that they were not allowed to go back and amend returns. And this was basically put in service a few years ago, and a lot of people didn't actually even pay that much attention to it. But obviously, when we're pushing forward with a lot of these changes, the IRS and Congress are expecting people to go back and amend returns. That's the expectation. That's what this was designed for, is to create that cash flow into a business. So what they did is they actually came out about a week after the CARES Act came out. IRS came out with Revenue Procedure 2020-23. And what that did is it actually allows those partnerships a short period of time where they can go back and amend their 18 and 19 tax returns if they've already filed them. So the expectation is there that they're going to do that. And they actually put those requirements in there, allowing people to go back and make these changes. So there's a lot of things in there, but really what I wanted to point out today is Whether it's these new changes, whether it's the change to 163J, whether it's the change to qualified improvement property or the change to the NOLs, or something else that's existing out there, could it be the R&D tax credit? Could it be other tax provisions that are out there? It's important right now when companies are hunting for cash flow to make sure they're maximizing these provisions and looking at what their potential opportunities are, to make sure they're gathering everything out. Because it's one thing to sit there and wait for the banks to push these SBA loans or to wait for the paycheck protection programs. But if you're sitting with money that you've already paid into the IRS and you haven't gone out and accessed it yet, that's one of the quickest ways to get cash flow into the business in a short period of time. And that's a really beneficial thing that companies can't overlook right now when everybody's just looking for ways to keep businesses going over the next few months. If you have any questions about this or anything else, feel free to reach out to anyone at McGuire Sponsel and we'll walk you through a lot of these provisions. I appreciate you logging on and listening today. I look forward to talking to you all again in the future.
Thanks so much for listening to McGuire on the Wire. Have a question from today's episode or interested in our team covering another topic? Reach out to us at McGuire on the Wire at McGuireSponsel.com.